Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I don't know, recall God saying that. Maybe he did, though. If he didn't, that's a great, I love that line by God.
Russ Gellinger.
College football brings out some wild takes about God like few other things can. And it's so true. It's so true.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Okay. I thought it was something seriously wrong, you know, like we really were worried about Coach Harbaugh here, as opposed to a 3-game self-imposed school suspension.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, presented by Invesco QQQ. It is Overreaction Monday, and it is Monday we're taping this. We will normally have this out for your start of your work commute Monday morning, if not sooner, sometime Sunday night. But it's Tuesday. It can be Tuesday morning, whatever. It's when we run through everything that happened over the weekend. And we delayed it a day because of the big matchup in Orlando. Florida State versus LSU. And this was a beatdown at Disney World. Florida State, Seminoles are back. They dominate the second half of this game against LSU. Score 31 consecutive points at some point. Look absolutely tremendous, as good as they've looked in a decade. LSU, meanwhile, has all sorts of questions. Pat, what happened last night in Orlando? I will start with you.
Wow. Great credit to Florida State for rising to the occasion, putting it together in game, really, because it was kind of fits and starts. And I mean, it was a really interesting game. All kinds of stuff happened. And for a half, maybe even more than a half, it was kind of a jump ball game. And I thought it was going to come down to who could make a play or two at the end. But no, Florida State locked in and started executing, especially offensively, and just absolutely blew LSU away to the point where I felt like LSU quit late in that game. So great job by Mike Norvell. And he said, he told his team at halftime, he said, "I promise you, we will score every possession in the second half if we just take care of the details." And they did. They blocked better. They stopped dropping passes. Jordan Travis settled in a little bit more. They have got a lot of weapons. They're really talented. And frankly, I thought this was not just, as you said, their biggest moment really since 2014, but they needed it because their school had spent so much time shooting off their mouths about how they were basically too good for the ACC and they need more money and they need this and they need that, that they needed to back it up on the field because they hadn't backed it up in years. Now, it was lined up for them. They had brought in they had a huge year in the transfer portal. They had players stay who could have gone into the draft. And so they put it all together and backed up the board of trustees and the school president and everybody else who basically said Florida State is too good for the ACC and is one of back among the elite. Well, now they are. Good job, Florida State.
Yeah, they picked on LSU's weakness going in, which is the corners. And they just ate them alive. Give credit to, the coaches, obviously, for scheming that up at Florida State. But, man, they've got some really big weapons. Jordan Travis played pretty incredible. His numbers are insane. 340 passing yards. I think he only, missed on, like, 8 passes, and there were probably 4 drops. And then his two weapons, Johnny Wilson, 6'7", receiver who he had a couple of drops, but obviously, he's a huge target, and he was open, it seemed like, every play. And then Keon Coleman, transfer from Michigan State, Louisiana guy, ran into his family outside the locker room and wrote a little bit about him and his family and how much they were looking forward to a game against the home state team, and he really excelled, right? 119 receiving yards, 9 catches, first-round type material going in, and clearly didn't hurt himself there. So they had a great game plan to expose LSU's weakness. And, boy, they did it. And they got an incredible performance from a Louisiana guy against the Tigers.
So your column was excellent off the game, Ross, on Yahoo Sports. I encourage anyone to go check it out. You just ran into all this reporting was done right then
all these quotes?
Yeah, it kind of helped that that he was a Louisiana guy, and I spent a lot of time in Louisiana, so I kind of had connection to some of his people, and his AAU basketball coach, I reached out to him, you know, in the middle of the fourth quarter or so, and then he was at the game, and so got to see him, and kind of just was looking for the family in the holding area where the parents go, and so they were all there. His brother was there, and his mom and a couple of his like friends, and so was able to kind of chat with them a little bit about the game. I mean, it meant a lot to them. Obviously, they're from Opelousas, Louisiana, about 50 miles west of Baton Rouge. He wasn't offered a scholarship by LSU coming out of high school. He was a two-way player, so you know he wanted to play basketball and football in college, which would have been hard at LSU. And I think that was I don't know. There were two things going against him, right? That, because I don't think LSU was a fan of him playing both. And then two was he was just a raw talent. I think he was a little, you know, kind of developed late, a late bloomer, so to speak, because he only started playing football like in eighth or ninth grade. And so he was a basketball star really all throughout his childhood. And went to Michigan State for a couple years, obviously broke out last year, and you know, played basketball as a freshman too at Michigan State, but not much. And then didn't play his sophomore year because he transferred out. And you know, he transferred obviously transferred to Florida State, and the rest is history.
Painful loss for Michigan State, whose offense could use a Keon Coleman.
Yeah,
three touchdowns. He was unbelievable. We get to this in a sec, but we'll get to the LSU defense in a second. But this quote from his mom, was it Raven Savoy?
Yeah. Yeah.
God says, make your enemies your footstool. He did it against LSU because LSU didn't offer him. I don't know, recall God saying that. Maybe he did, though. If he didn't, that's I love that line by God. Nice quote by God.
Well, there's that been
God,
some...
God can turn a phrase now. God there's knows been... how to... He's got away with words. God. Great been... quote, God. And great quote. I mean, this is... God says, make your enemies your footstool. This is like some stuff out of like... one of like an action movie, right?
Yeah, it's... like there's been fiction. Some criticism of the attribution there of that quote to God.
Really?
Apparently it was
Wait, God wasn't quoted for
I wish
quoted.
The
I
only
don't
thing that
made a holy
it...
war here, but there's
yeah.
a
scandal.
We've had wars
Leviticus
gone on.
Leviticus chapter 3 got it all wrong.
Which book that spoke to God did not he said God said rain hell down on them those purple tigers.
Yes, yes. Well,
God
apparently
said,
it was in the
neck.
Bible, but not yet. Play neck. God, apparently it was in the, but the quote was in the Bible, and I did find it before I wrote it. I found it in the Bible. However, God really didn't say it according to the Bible, but it is in the Bible. I think
whatever.
It's Psalm 110:1. I guess is the line.
We have many pastors whatever. Listen to this show.
Yes, yeah, we do.
Sure
Pastor
we'll
Conrad. Pastor Conrad. Yes. Please.
Yeah, they'll correct us.
Pastor Conrad will let us know. He's a dedicated listener.
I love some of these comments, by the way, because this is such a true comment here to the story. College football brings out some wild takes about God like few other things can. And it's so true. It's so true.
I mean, this quote is just fantastic. It's true by the
wild
Bible
takes about
of
God.
The College Football Inquirer. It is true. Anyway, speaking of someone who needs the help of God, Brian Kelly, by Ooh. God, what was that? First off, how does LSU not have any cornerbacks? Like, what?
Yeah.
Not quarterback. Yeah, they had a quarterback. Yeah, guy was running for his life.
Yeah.
Cornerback.
Really good.
This is the place that has like just an assembly line of 6'3 dudes with like long arms and like what happened there?
DBU. Yeah. No DBs right now.
Harold Perkins he plays linebacker in this game. And I don't know what he was doing. He's just kind of like he wasn't an impact.
their offense gets stopped twice in the red zone, right? They had two red zone stops.
Yeah.
This was an absolute mess by LSU. What? I had a pick to win. I had Jaden Daniels winning the Heisman. I had LSU winning the West and in the playoff. I couldn't. God treated me like a footstool on this one.
Well, no, it was a mess for LSU. And the funny thing is, like, yeah, they left points on the field with some fourth down short yardage mishaps early in the game. But they were in position, man. I mean, they were winning 17-14, and then they just absolutely got pushed around, stood up, slapped down, beaten in coverage. And the one thing about Keon Coleman makes hard catches. He wins contested catches at a very, very high rate. I don't know if there's anybody else in college football, maybe Travis Hunter, who we'll get to, who can just beat the guy who's covering him for a ball that's a jump ball. And by the way, Mel Tucker had some things to say about NIL, which probably contributed to Keon Coleman transferring to Florida State. And Mel said they basically need more money for NIL. Well, I know a couple million they could come up with just off of Mel's salary.
Yeah. Nine and a half? Personally. I think it's $9.5 million.
Yeah. $9.5 million. What are you getting out of that? Let's make him a $7.5 million guy and see if he can pay some players.
And the $80 million locker room and facility. Like, yeah. Yeah. I don't want to hear MSU claiming they're broke. We'll talk about this another time if Mel keeps. But, well, then raise the money, Mel. You get the, like, 50,000, yeah. Again, hundreds of thousands of alums, billionaires. Like, yeah. You'll be crying poor.
No.
Poor little especially, old Michigan State.
Right. When you're one of the highest paid coaches in the country, don't be saying you're poor. Anyway, but no, Brian Kelly's, after the game, wow. He just, like, did everything but pull out a sword and swan dive on it. The quotes that he gave reflected, I think, profound dismay over their performance. This is what he said. He said, We certainly were not the football team I thought we were. I take full responsibility for not having our team playing the football I thought they would. This is a total failure from a coaching standpoint and a player standpoint that we obviously have to address and have to own. For some reason, we thought we were somebody else. We thought we were the two-time defending national champion Georgia Bulldogs or something. I don't know. We were mistaken. It's like, wow. I mean, and here, this, to me, Notre Dame fans seized upon this as, oh, Brian Kelly's throwing his team under the bus again. No, he threw himself under the bus, first and foremost. And I think throwing the players somewhat under the bus is perfectly allowable in this instance. They quit. They stopped playing hard in the fourth quarter of a huge game in the season opener. So from an LSU standpoint, woo, it was not good. Now, the good news is you just lost to a great team in a neutral but not really fully neutral setting, and you've got the SEC schedule ahead. If you win out, you're going to be fine. If you even just get to the SEC championship game 11-1, which won't be easy, but if you can do it, you'll be in the playoff hunt. So, but the people love to panic, and LSU fans especially love to panic, and they got reason to panic a little today.
Yeah, the Harold Perkins thing is really weird. They shifted him, like Dan said, kind of more in coverage. I believe Pro Football Focus charted, they chart everything.
And I mean, this is the one of the premier, for people that are forgetting who Harold Perkins is, and you shouldn't, but he was a dominant freshman year edge rusher. I think there was one game he had four sacks.
Mm-hmm.
Destroyed Arkansas. He is a guy that comes off that edge and gets it. And when you have bad cornerbacks, you need a pass rush. And yeah, what do you have on Pro Football Focus? He was playing in the middle, playing like just zone coverage. Or something. I don't know what.
Yeah,
he was doing.
I mean, a lot of times last year he was most successful when he was like QB spy, and he did some of that last night. But PFF has 28 snaps. He was in coverage, so roughly like more than a third of Florida State snaps he was in coverage. Which, doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and is probably why he rated out so poorly. So, according to PFF as well, he rated out number 19 of 19 LSU defensive players who they rated.
Yikes.
As far as the score, which is shocking.
I think they out outthought themselves on the strategy there. Like they're trying to make a really a dominant player even more dominant, or get him in a better position. Maybe he can.
Yeah.
But at the you lose, there just isn't another Harold Perkins out there. All right.
Can I issue a mild, not really dissenting opinion, but another part of the Harold sure. Perkins thing here? Well, I absolutely agree that I would prefer him in a place where he can attack the backfield. He had that one game against Arkansas.
Yeah.
And other than that, I mean, his stats were good, but they were not. It was not a Will Anderson sort of stat thing. I think it was a case of one team that absolutely failed to come up with a way to block him. But other than that, he had a game with 1.5 sacks last year against Mississippi State. He had a game with 1 against Mississippi, 1 against Alabama, and 1 against Purdue. He had 0 sacks in 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 9 games. I mean, it's not like he was a game in, game out wrecker. I'm not sure why they changed his position, but I think he was the product of looking really fast on the field and running people down and destroying Arkansas. He's a good player. I'm not sitting here saying he's, you know, the next coming.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Coach Prime, story of the weekend, undoubtedly could not really have had a better opening act. We did not know what this team would look like. So many transfers. They end up being physical. They play a sharp brand of football on both sides. Shador Sanders, 38 of 47, 510 yards, 4 TDs. Travis Hunter, the two-way, the former number one recruit, plays over 100 snaps in the game, 119 yards receiving on 9 catches, has an interception. Immediate, you know, just incredible two-way play. Dylan Edwards, the kid they flipped from Notre Dame at the end, the running back, had the big game winner. Everything went good, though. The uniforms look sharp. Like, those things are badass. The post-game press conference of Coach Prime just being absolutely outrageous. Loved every moment of it. I got receipts. Like, we said we're coming. Who's down? The whole thing. The absolute, just every single bit of this thing I thought was fantastic. Ross, you were there. What, but outside of what happened on the field, what is memorable about, oh, forget it.
What stood out? What stood out? What do you remember?
You know, we got a show on the field, and then we got a show off the field in the press conference, of course. Prime delivering as he often does. Even before he walked in the press conference room, you could hear him down the hallway. I got receipts. I got receipts. He must have said the word receipts 25 times. I figured he actually would show up with a prop and actually have receipts in his hand, like literal thin, you know, white receipts, and just like throw them at us or something.
Missed opportunity.
I know. And I was texting some people in the locker room hoping that they actually had real receipts in the locker room. Sadly, they didn't. They did have a DJ they brought in locally from Dallas to DJ in the locker room, of course. But Dion cut that DJ off when he started speaking. In fact, it was pretty loud. And so he yelled at them, cut that DJ off, cut the music off. I'm talking. And it was quite a 15 minutes of a press conference, right? He for some reason targeted Ed Werder of ESPN, who covered him at the Cowboys. I saw what you wrote. He called it bull junk. So I'm sitting there trying to write this story after the
press
conference.
Did Ed Werder write anything?
Wondering what Ed Werder would have written. I started Googling around, whatever. The only thing that comes up is back in March, Ed Werder tweeted about Deion Sanders, and he described Deion as a celebrity football coach. Wow. And I assume, even though that's fairly banal, that Deion did not take that well at all. So he called it bull junk and asked Ed Werder multiple times if he believed, and Ed Werder responded, in what? And then Deion said, you don't believe, next question. It was something. So
this is really a faith-based episode of this College Football Inquirer. We've got God's stools. We got,
yes.
Do you
yes.
believe? Yeah.
So it was entertaining. But on the field, obviously, incredible. Like, just, I think, you know, everybody was in the press box, and we mostly all had the same responses to everything going on, which was like, what the hell, right? Like, nobody expected the firepower and the explosiveness from the Colorado offense, and it was incredible. He's got, you know, he's got three really great players there: Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter, in the running back, right? Dylan Edwards. I mean, they were electric, and it was really, really impressive. Their issue this year will be defense and special teams, because offense will not be there. They're going to have to outscore teams, which is going to be fun in the Pac-12, right? Because the Pac-12 is loaded offensively with great quarterbacks, and you know, in the it's fitting, right? In the final year of the Pac-12, probably would be the league's best and most memorable season. You have Dion and in his offense and all these other quarterbacks, so it should be interesting to watch the rest of the season.
Pac-12 went 13-0. So far this year. It's the best start by a conference overall in like 50, 60 years.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah. Not bad. Thanks for coming.
As a, as our friend Stuart Mandel of The Athletic said, can someone get Apple back on the line?
I know. If this was done 2 years ago, the TV negotiation would have been different.
Yeah.
This is going to be a footnote to history that if they just had this year, because we'll get back to prime, but like, you watch these, I mean, Washington was really fun, exciting team to watch. USC, like, they were dominant this weekend.
Yeah.
And not just
Oregon,
against bad teams.
Explosive. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
Oregon State.
Yeah. Boise State looked pretty good and they still just got housed. Right. So there was a lot going on there in the Pac-12. All right. Your thoughts on Coach Prime and the Buffs' big weekend, Pat?
I would like to make a motion that we just become a Coach Prime podcast until
we kind of were all offseason.
Well,
weren't we?
Well, we were. We talked about him as much as anybody, but now, oh God, this is just like unbelievable. I was watching that. Like, let's just do the podcast right now during the game. Let's do an in-game podcast. Let's do a halftime podcast. Let's do an immediate post-game podcast. Then I read the quotes. Oh, let's do another one. Because it was just like so much content coming out of that game. Yeah. I mean, I've been sitting here trying to come up with a coach who walks into a new situation and delivers as well as he did. And you can go back. Jimmy Johnson's first game as coach at the University of Miami in 1984. They beat number one Auburn when they used to have the kickoff classic. But that was Miami. That in Colorado. That didn't take an over 1-11 team. Danny Ford's first game as the full-time head coach at Clemson beat Ohio State and Woody Hayes in the Gator Bowl when Woody Hayes decided to punch somebody. But that's Clemson. I mean, what they did is incredible. Three touchdown underdog on the road, TCU coming off playing in the national championship, and TCU may have some serious issues, but still, you walk into that situation, you talk all the talk, and then you walk that walk that they did. That was impressive. That was incredible. And that was not just a bunch of athletes out there saying, whoop, we're better than you. That was execution, poise, performance in the crunch, offensive line that everybody thought was going to be terrible, stood up. Defense, as Draw said, wasn't very good, but made a key stop at the end. That's a well-coached team. People need to say that. And there's going to be a lot of people that have a lot of problems with Dion and the way he does stuff. But he says out loud what a bunch of other coaches think. You think there aren't a bunch of arrogant men in this profession? They're all arrogant, and they're all sitting in the locker room saying what he's saying. Yeah, nobody believed in us. The stuff that he said at halftime about Travis Hunter being a Heisman, if he catches a couple of things, the Heisman's in the crib chilling. Other coaches would not say that, but they'll be thinking, yeah, we're going to promote this guy for the Heisman. He just says it out loud.
They're going to start
picking
saying
fights
it.
Picking fights with the media. Yeah, there was a lot of coaches that would love to do that, and some actually do. So Dion is just, there's no filter. There's nothing holding him back, and he is a force of personality. And, yes, what is this going to do for recruiting? What's this going to do for roster building? You look at him, you look at what Texas State with G.J. Kinney brought in 50 players. They go and win by double digits against Baylor. I mean, we'll see if it can be sustained. But now the stakes and the stage keep getting bigger for Colorado the more they win. And we'll see what happens in Boulder against Nebraska.
Yeah, and look, it's going to be a hard season. This is a great league. So, yep. You know, and that was always our thing. Like, gosh, you know what? You know, it's interesting. You know, people doubted him. This podcast definitely did not. I mean, we were hyping him to be the Auburn coach. We thought he should have been the Arizona State coach. You know, I completely believe in him. The whole thing on Deion, well, he wanted HBCU because he had better players than the other teams. What the hell's Nick Saban do? What's Urban Meyer do? Like, of course, that's the whole point. The whole point is to get better players than the other team. Why wouldn't you? Like, there's like some coaching note. Like, they always give coach of the year. Wasn't it like, I think Ryan Day finally did it, but wasn't there like 30, 40 years Ohio State's coach never won Big Ten coach of the year?
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, they got all the players. Well, that's the point.
Yeah, it is the point.
Get the better players. Like, you know, hey, how's Bill Belichick doing without Tom Brady? It's not going so well. Not going quite as well. It really helped when I had that guy. It's just such a ridiculous concept. I don't know how many people really hate Deion Sanders. I think this is going to be a little bit blown up. There's always some old timers that are going to dislike this, that, but almost everyone I know thinks this is just it's a breath of fresh air. It's something different. It's something new. It's totally wild. And I think as big as his recruiting was last year, he won't bring in as many guys. He has not killed it in high school recruiting yet. They are not landing elite players, but guard your flips, man. Ooh. The late flips. I mean, you watch that. This man, I did a column at the Super Bowl. We talked about it, but if you didn't listen over the winter, about how charismatic this guy was. Deion Sanders goes to Super Bowl Radio Row, and I follow him around for like 2 hours. And you know, they have all the guys there to pitch a product. They have, you know, NFL Hall of Famers, everyone's doing these little radio bits and little video bits. I, you know, do a deal with the Vesco QQQ or something like that, right? But, you know, Visa, whatever. I'm here to sponsor the, you know, whatever, the Miller Lite. And they've got, I mean, you got Montana there. You got Barry Sanders. You got everybody. And I watched, like, Michael Strahan run across Radio Road to get with Deion. Emmett Smith run across. Like, The Hall of Famers were flocking to Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Among the gold jacket, absolute A-list, coolest people, he's the pinnacle. He's the one they want a moment with. The charisma on the guy, I can't even imagine if I am a kid sitting around going, I need to transfer, or I'm a high school recruit, and watch that and go, I won't be part of that. Like that, that looks fun. This guy. He's hyping his guy up for the Heisman. He's talking a totally different language. Absolutely love it. This could be, if he sticks where he's at or wherever he's going to get, hell, I don't know if he's got to leave Colorado. I don't even know if he does. I mean, he could load up in the transfer portal in December, because I think every kid watching that was like, shoosh, it's a lot more fun than what I got going.
Well, yeah, it doesn't matter where he's at, it seems like, right? He's done it at Jackson State. Yeah. He's done it at Colorado, like with the player acquisition. So, yeah, it doesn't matter. He seems to be able to attract talent anywhere. Let's not look past what they did and what Sean Lewis, the offensive coordinator, did just schematically in calling a game. You know, he's pretty well respected. Sean Lewis is among you know, the coaching community. And he was at Kent State for a few years, actually had a lot of success there, or at least had some success there, which at Kent State was fairly unusual. So he, which you don't see a ton, he left a, you know, had FBS head coaching job and joined Deion because I think he believed, unlike all of us in the media. And so he probably thought this would be a better launching point for, you know, a major head job for him, and right now it's off to a great start.
Sure is. Everybody watching. All right, we'll be back right after this message. All right, SEC went 1-3 this weekend. The vaunted, mighty, it just means more. SEC 1-3 against Power 5 opponents. The only victory was Tennessee defeating Virginia. Joe Milton, our favorite Joe Milton, looked pretty good in that game. 21 of 30 for 201, two TDs, had some nice passes. cannot wait till NFL draft experts try to wrap their mind around Joe Milton in a year. He's befuddled us all for years, but he did look good. Other than that, not so good. Not so good. North Carolina beat South Carolina 31-17 in Charlotte. We already talked about LSU getting beaten handily, and Utah just pushes Florida around up in Salt Lake City. Thoughts on the SEC 1-3, Pat?
Oh, it was ugly. It really was. I mean, that, like you said, the three losses were pronounced losses. I mean, two touchdowns for Florida, two touchdowns for South Carolina, three touchdowns for LSU, and those were all games going in that people thought, jump ball, or the SEC should maybe win. I thought Florida was maybe the worst performance of any team in the country on the weekend. They were way back on Thursday. If you don't remember, I mean, they were awful. They couldn't do anything right. Penalties, misfires. Graham Mertz looked very much like the Wisconsin Graham Mertz. And Billy Napier kind of did an interesting thing coming into this season. He started talking this team up. Last year, he was very much guarded, you know, like, hey, might be a while. We might not be very good. And they weren't. They were 6-7. This year, it's like, oh, you know, we've got a little more buy-in. We've got some more guys. We've done this. We've done that. And they flopped. I mean, that was a bad performance, in my opinion. And it's one game. It was a good opponent. But Utah didn't even have Cam Rising, their quarterback. I don't know whether Brent Quithy played or not, their tight end. And Utah just absolutely was the better team for the entire 60 minutes of that game. So Florida's got to figure some things out. That was, I think, very disconcerting to go through an entire offseason with a guy who's supposed to know what he's doing and building things up there. And if anything, you took a step back. That looked like some of the worst Dan Mullen, Jim McElwain sort of performances there.
Yeah, the SEC, we went through them, I think, three losses to a ranked team to open the season. You have to go back 6 years. You got to go back to 2017 from the last time they lost one game to a ranked opponent in week one. Not a great opener for the league. And you got to think those teams, LSU, Florida, and South Carolina, you know, are likely to finish, you know, midway down or lower in the SEC standings. But we all remember that last year, despite LSU's season opening loss to Florida State, they ended up winning the West. It'll be interesting to watch. I was in the crowd the last few minutes of the game there in Orlando, and a Florida State fan yelled at an exiting LSU fan, "Go in the West like you did last year." So we'll see.
Really put him in his place.
Yeah.
Them's fighting words. Well, look, the SEC obviously has tremendous teams and all that, but part of their thing is the depth of great teams, and this isn't Vanderbilt losing. They actually beat Hawaii by 7, but beat them. This is like the heart and soul of the league. Like, how good is a victory over Florida this year? How good is a victory over South Carolina? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, so one of the things they've always been able to lean on is, well, look, we play all the good. We have all the good. All our teams are good. We got 10. We're 10 deep. Well, I don't know if you're 10 deep. You know, this is where you got to win these. You got to win some of the games. One positive, and I'm befuddled by this. Jalen Milroe, after all the consternation, all the Saban basically acting like he didn't have a quarterback. It was Middle Tennessee State, but the Crimson Tide went 56-7. Milroe 13-18 for 194, no picks. He had three long touchdown passes. He had two. He rushed for 48 and two more touchdowns. Looked pretty good. Someone asked Saban if this would carry over in the all season. He gave this great quote, not biblical, but this is a Coke bottle. You know, he always got that Coke bottle in front of him. This is a Coke bottle. It's not a crystal ball.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, coach.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, not pretty bad. Good. He's in his own way. Him and Dion are, yeah, they do that Aflac thing. Anyway, Milroe looked pretty good though, Ross.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a QB after him.
I know. The way Saban was talking about the quarterback competition, you know, you figure there would be some more struggles there than there were. Yeah, pretty good numbers. 13-18, 194, 3 touchdowns, ran for 48 yards, another 2 rushing touchdowns. Some of the things they did, I just caught some of the highlights that was at the TCU game, but some of the things they did kind of reminded me of, like, and he kind of reminds me, and this is not critical, although some probably would take it as that, but he reminds me of, like, remember Blake Sims? Wasn't it Blake Sims that Alabama had maybe years ago? Kiffin, it was when Kiffin was offensive coordinator, and they did a lot of, they did some different, that's when he was like evolving the offense a little bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was some of the things they did with him too. And I wonder if they're going to use that package a little more, what they did with Blake, but he's probably a little more talented, you know, and I was impressed.
Yeah. I mean, look, he performed well. And really their offense performed well. They only had like 64 snaps, and this might be a product of, you know, the way the game's going in terms of fewer plays, but they got a lot out of them, averaged 6.7 yards a play, able to run well, 40 carries, 205 yards, 40 runs, 24 passes. I think that's probably where Saban would like run pass balance to be. It may end up closer to 50-50 when you play harder opponents starting Saturday against Texas, but I think if they could avoid just throwing it all on Milroe's shoulders and saying, go out there and throw it 38, 40 times a game, they would prefer that. So we'll see if they can kind of maintain that level of balance of rushing and passing, and also just having a bunch of backs that they can throw out there, which they did showcase that, which they usually have.
Big game obviously coming this week. We'll talk a lot about the rest of the week. Texas will be there. All right, let's talk a little Big Ten. I went to the Michigan game. Free Harbaugh was the
bit. Oh my gosh.
Not enough cheeseburger signs or jokes. I was a little disappointed in that. JJ McCarthy did wear the Free Harbaugh deal. Also, in my endless quest to use this podcast to grift everything, I got tickets from
unbelievable.
That's right. Diag Partners. That's right. Creating custom staffing solutions. Jason Baranowski and Joe Sod took care of me with some tickets. That's it. If you throw me something, I'm grifting. I'm grafting. That's right.
Wow.
Creating custom staffing solutions right there.
I guess I can't get on you too much. I have a grill out back.
You did. You got that egg. I mean, we got to get something out of this podcast other than a headache. Anyway, Michigan was fine. Harbaugh, I don't know what Harbaugh did. I don't know if he said what he did yet. I think he watched. He was talking about going to his son's soccer game, but that didn't happen.
I think he watched the game at the offensive coordinator's house.
Oh, okay.
Him and Sharon Moore, yeah.
I was available to go over there, but then
similarly suspended
Sharon. Diag Partners took care of me.
Yes.
The two big stories, other than Purdue losing, was Drew Aller. Penn State beats West Virginia 38-15. I don't think it was – there's some questions about the Nittany Lions you guys can talk about, but Drew Aller did look very good, their quarterback, which we expected. He threw for 325, 3 touchdowns. He had a 72-yarder. There was – he looks like the real deal. Pat, thoughts on the Nittany Lions, what we could glean from West Virginia, good or bad?
Yeah, I watched a fair amount of that game flipping around there in that nighttime window, and I thought they looked good. And yes, Drew Aller looked good. He threw a beautiful bomb touchdown early on. They have weapons for him to get the ball to. They've got very good backs, but they've got receivers as well. A couple times they bogged down in the red zone. That's going to be a growth process, and the problem there is they had a kicker who missed a couple field goals. So you need a reliable kicker to try to get to a college football playoff, but Drew Aller, he's lived up to the billing for sure in week one. Now, West Virginia could end up being a pretty bad defense. We'll find out. But there's nothing that said, oh, this guy's overhyped. He looked like the real deal.
Yeah, this game was I guess the Gambleholics had their eye on. I think Penn State scored with like 5 seconds left in the game, right, to cover the spread. And Neil Brown, the West Virginia coach, who many believe is, you know, is maybe in his last season, and certainly this one didn't help, was asked about how he thought Penn State, you know, ran up the score and scoring late. And he said, you know, it didn't bother me. And then he was asked a follow up, and he said, no, it really, really doesn't bother me. I mean, I wouldn't have done it. You know, and he kind of launched into like this 20-second, you know, span about it. But I wish we'd get, hopefully, we get this game a little more too. I love the border rivalry there. And I know we're talking about Penn State, but yeah, this one wasn't probably good for Neil Brown's tenure, but big one for him in a couple weeks.
I thought they did pretty. I mean, the first half they played well. I mean, it was 14-7. Yeah. Oh, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
they
if
hung
you're
in
West,
there.
You're West Virginia, just hoping not to come in last. I mean, you know, you're trying to show something there. I did not love the line play on either side for Penn State. That would be my question. West Virginia was able to move the center of that line. And I'm, you know, if they can, what's Ohio State and Michigan going to? It's just such an interesting season for Penn State because they got to prove it. Also didn't love the O-line play of Ohio State. So they go over to Indiana. They clearly were completely confused by Tom Allen's trick of having a secret kicker. The secret kicker. They did have that. They did kick one field goal. I don't even know who hit it. I don't know the box score ahead. Well, I guess we found out who the kicker was. They did not score a touchdown, so we never found out. 23-3, Ohio State wins. Kyle McCord, 20 of 33 for 239. No touchdowns. He had a pick. They only gained 380 yards as an offense, which is not Ohio State typical numbers. Not sure what to make out of this, but I certainly wasn't. There's a lot of consternation in Columbus over this offensive performance, because why not overreact to a 20-point victory? But they got so many playmakers, you expect a little bit more out of Buckeyes. So I think Penn State's got their quarterback. I don't know that Ohio State does. Pat?
I agree, at least not on the level that they are accustomed to, because they have had some absolute ballers for like 7 years in a row at that position. And now it's a little bit more of a question mark for sure. Again, okay, but nothing great. And that's when Marvin Harrison, 2 catches for 18 yards. I mean, it's a guy people are talking about by far the best receiver in the country, and I don't disagree, although after watching Keon Coleman, whoa. But, you know, I mean, him, Emeka Egbuka, Julian Fleming, Cade Stover, the tight end, they got guys that, I mean, you should be out there just picking your mismatches and taking advantage if you can. They've got 3 excellent running backs. So offensive line not doing very well in short yardage. That's not a new thing with Ohio State. And then quarterback, just kind of a guy out there so far. We'll see if McCord can, you know, develop from there as his first start. Certainly no reason to pass judgment as far as, you know, what he's going to look like all year. But it was definitely not the same Ohio State offense we're used to seeing.
Yeah, I couldn't watch this game. I was watching the I was right in Colorado and Dion, but I remember looking back to the score and being surprised, and then looking at the stat line, and being even more surprised at 2 for 18 when it came to, like Pat just said, Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't understand how that happens in a game. I don't know if Indiana had a great game plan defensively against him, or Kyle McCord is a new quarterback, you know, breaking in on the road. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but a big surprise, Dan, that the Ohio State fans are freaking out after 4 quarters of football.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole point. Chris Freeman was the secret kicker. Remember,
there we go.
Indiana would not name their kicker, their first string kicker. Now we know. Big Ten coaches plan accordingly. couple items to clean up. Who is the real Miami? It was definitely Miami, Florida. They kicked the hell out of Miami, Ohio. Thanks for coming up. Obviously, we had that in the quote unquote confusion bowl. So there was that. Credit to Fresno State. We'll mention that because they beat Purdue. They won the Mountain West last year, and they have a lot of guys back. and this could be a pretty good team. They beat, went on the road and beat Purdue 39-35. They have a transfer quarterback, Mikey Keene, at 4 touchdowns. So that was a big win for Fresno and the Mountain West. And, you know, we didn't do an emergency pod on the Big Two, the Pac Two, but that Mountain West as the sixth league really could be, or fifth league, how many leagues? Fifth best league could be really good. Like adding Oregon State, Washington State to all these other teams, it's a pretty good little league. You know, it's not, I don't know, it's that far behind the Big 12, particularly after this weekend.
Well, I do want to give props to Fresno. Jeff Tedford is such a good coach, and we always tend to forget and overlook and not think about him when you're naming off good coaches. He's just outstanding. He has done so well in his second stint now at Fresno since coming back after being at Cal. And Jake Haener was their quarterback last year, and he left, and I just thought, well, gosh, I mean, that guy was really good. You know, replacing him is going to be tough. Well, they go get Mikey Keene, who was kind of a run-pass guy at UCF, and they plug him in. He looks like a pure-pass guy there. 366 yards passing, 70% completion, 4 touchdowns. That's very, very impressive. And, yes, the Mountain West, intriguing now. Gloria Navarez was out and about, the commissioner. She was at Colorado State, Washington State. Wonder why. Then she was at San Jose State, Oregon State. Wonder why. Trying to target. She was recruiting. No doubt about it. Always be recruiting. Gloria was. So what happens there? We will see as realignment continues to churn onward.
Yeah, definitely. A couple other ones we got to look at here. So speaking of the Pac-2, Oregon State, Washington State, they're all alone now. Just all they have is each other. It's an Adele song, I think. A sad, sad story. We're going to keep track of how they do just in conference play, just the two of them. And I think Oregon State could win the Pac-12. We'll see. But we want to present the Pac-2 championship at the end of the year to whoever has the better season. It's sort of like that commander in chief thing with
we're going to give the Tupac championship,
the Deuce. Yeah. I don't know what we're going to come up with something, but both are 1-0, as we said. Pac-12 won every game. So that's good. We also, the Brian Ferentz, keep my job. I need Iowa to average 25 points a game. This is in the contract. Iowa must score 25 a game and win at least 7. They played Utah State 24-14. It's already behind schedule. Not good. Come on. Now, I mean, it's just a point. It's just a point, but that's not good.
Here's the thing. Like, after 2 possessions, they were on pace to score like 70. They scored touchdowns on their first 2 possessions, including their first season opening drive touchdown since 1991. Like, how does that happen? I can't imagine that. But they did, and then so everybody, oh, gosh, look, they're going to be so much better. And then, after those first 2 drives, not so much. So Ferentz tracker very much in play after week 1.
Yeah. Also, I have an update on this bull that was driving in the car.
Oh, good.
I know it's nothing to do with the games. Howdy Doody is the guy's name. Howdy Doody is the bull. Oh,
perfect.
Yeah, Howdy Doody's from somewhere in Nebraska. I never heard of the town, obviously. Neely, Nebraska. Anyway, it turns out that the Washington Post actually really got after this story and put some real journalism into it. Democracy dies in darkness, and we're writing about bulls in so you got something better to do, Washington Post?
Norfolk, Nebraska.
there must be no more government corruption going on. Anyway, this is a Daily Mail. This is why I read the Daily Mail, not the Washington Post. But anyway, they threw me for a curveball. So this guy who's got Howdy Doody, he wasn't transporting him. His name's Lee Meyer. He keeps Howdy as a pet. Keeps him as a pet. He wasn't transferring him. He wanted to drive him around in a car like a dog. Because, like, you know, the dog, we mentioned this, dogs like to stick their head out the window. And his granddaughter said that he wouldn't be able to pull it off. And he said, Grandpa can do anything. I want to prove her wrong. So he took the, what was the car? I forget now. The Crown Vic. He has a Crown Vic, a former former police car.
Yeah, right.
He reinforced the floor and the suspension and the frame. He put a gate on the side, added a plexiglass barrier, and then he rides Howdy Doody around the countryside for fun and gives them treats.
Grandpa really can do anything. I'm impressed.
He's bored. He's retired. He says, everybody's got to do something, right? I just got a little land and a little time, and this is what I decided to do. It's actually a heartwarming tale of why this old man and his bull.
Old Man and the Bull. There you go. The great novel.
Howdy Doody. We were going to Norfolk's Oktoberfest.
Norfolk. Yeah.
Did you just say, what is happening?
Norfolk. Let's just go with Norfolk.
Folk, huh? It's not F-U-C-K. No. You sound like you're
kind of did sound like that, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. I mean, that's bleep, probably a Boston.
Do I have to bleep that out? Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I think we're probably going to have to push the old bleep button.
I can't speak Nebraskan.
It didn't get flagged last week. I think we're still doing good.
Did I say it the wrong way? Did I say it like that too?
Oh, yeah.
We're cruising.
Yeah. I'm a mess. Why do I have a podcast?
I think it's Diag too, not Diag, for your people that got you your tickets.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Diag Partners. Yeah. What is it? Diag. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Just looking out for your graft, man.
Yeah, I know. I won't get tickets again. All right. Diag. Anyway, it's a heartwarming tale, isn't it? It is a heartwarming
tale. Yeah. Look at that. A man and his bull.
Man and his bull. All right, it's time to move on to our most innovative play of the weekend, courtesy of Invesco QQQ. Pat and Ross and I will pick a innovative play each week and highlight it here, courtesy of Invesco QQQ. And the one I saw, there was a whole bunch of them in the USC game. Caleb Williams had an incredible performance. It wasn't just... he had 5 touchdowns and 4 incompletions, but it was just the chucking it all over the field. A very exciting time for USC. Dante Moore over at UCLA had a couple of bombs too, so this is really heating up in LA. But they ran this play in the second quarter. Lincoln Riley drew it up. They're leading 28-7 over Nevada, and I've never seen this play. They do play action. Williams looks right, then he looks left, and the running back that he faked it to just runs straight down the field. While Williams is faking everybody out and confusing all the safeties and basically pulling each safety to either side, he just runs right down the middle, and they throw it wide open into him. Do you see that play, Pat?
I did. I loved it. You know, Lincoln Riley, certainly one of the most creative offensive minds out there. And, you know, it's hard to basically run a running back go route out of the backfield because there's too many people in the way. But that's what you do here. You spread the field, and you're looking the safeties off, which is so much of the game in college football. And boom, you just send him straight down the middle, and he's open. And you got to have a guy who's fast and has hands, and they do that with Marshawn Lloyd there. And then, of course, Caleb Williams drops it right in on him. Love the play.
Yeah, it's like kind of like it reminds me of like a wheel route, but instead of running around toward the sideline, he's just splitting the entire field. And, you know, the linebackers there in the middle, the two linebackers just kind of bite a little bit and step up on the play action to the running back, and he just splits them right up the middle. It's cool play call. And yeah, USC is going to be a force on offense this year when you look at the combination of weapons plus Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, this was one they definitely had drawn up off season and pretty excited to use. You just never see a running back run that hard through the line and then not block anybody. And yeah, he's just wide open. So there you have it. That's our QQ Invesco QQQ Innovative Play of the Weekend. So thanks again to Invesco QQQ. We will try to do that every weekend. Time to hand out some hardware. The Heisman Trophy is handed out at the end of the year. People like to wait to vote. Not Coach Prime. He is Coach Prime has trumped
chilling
us
in
on
the
this.
Crib.
We've run the small sample Heisman for a number of years. I think Travis Hunter won a small sample Heisman last year. We give one out every week based on, you know, who we think should win the Heisman for a 1 week performance. Prime's giving it out after a half. Or he said he could have. He could have. I mean, I think one game, I think that's the really small sample Heisman. We're going with small sample Heisman. Pat, who won your small sample Heisman this week?
Well, since I get to go first, I will take the overwhelming, obvious choice, and it is Deion Sanders' choice as well, Travis Hunter. I've not seen a game like that with my own two eyes ever, okay? 129 snaps on a 100-degree day in Texas. That wasn't dabbling on one side of the ball, but mostly playing the other. That was full playing, cornerback and wide receiver, 11 catches, 119 yards, had the pick, and that interception was incredible. Athleticism, anticipation, and just nose for the ball. Great play there to stop a touchdown and really help keep that game in Colorado's favor. He broke up another pass. He was in prime coverage on a lot of other big shots down the field. He was either assisted tackle or solo tackle on a touchdown-saving play at one point. I mean, Travis Hunter put on a performance we just don't see, right? Champ Bailey, I don't think ever had a game like that. Charles Woodson, I don't think ever had a game like that. Chris Gamble, who played both ways for Ohio State in 2002 and 2003, I don't think ever had a game like that. Can he keep this up all year? I don't know. But for one day, that's by far the small sample Heisman performance.
Yeah, that's
the
one
rest
for sure.
Just mentioning,
yeah,
trying to be diplomatic. Concur.
I haven't seen the latest like Heisman odds, but I'm guessing trap them because it was incredible. So mine, I'll go with a game. Actually, I didn't really get the chance to watch a lot, but I saw a few highlights in the stat line. It's pretty ridiculous. Michael Penix Jr. For Washington. 29 of 40, 450 yards passing, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. Ended up throwing at least 2 passes to, 7 players, spreading it around, and Washington just rolled Boise. So, hey, Michael Penix Jr., a lot made of the Bo Nix Heisman campaign with the big billboards. In fact, I spent a lot of last week in Dallas, and there's one right in downtown Dallas, Bo Nix. But Michael Penix, not mentioned as much, but certainly off to a good start this year. And who knows, maybe he's a little dark horse Heisman there.
The great thing about Washington, they go deep because he's got the arm and they got the talent. And so, you want to watch a fun offense, vertical, vertical, vertical.
That was a big time performance. That was a really exciting game to watch. Us knocking back and forth on that. All right, I'm going to go with Cincinnati quarterback Emory Jones. The Bearcats won 66-13 against Eastern Kentucky. So, all noted, but the man scored 7 touchdowns on Saturday. He had 6 in the first half. The quarterback, he was they rolled all over ECU, but he had a touchdown run. He had led the drive. I mean, they just moved the ball out well, but you get 7 touchdowns, you win a small sample Heisman. I think that's just a rule. So, they should have grabbed him for Iowa. He would have set the Brian Ferentz be sitting in tall cotton right now if he only had that. So Emory Jones, Cincinnati, wins my small sample Heisman. All right, we say a lot of mean things on this pod. I don't know that we said too many this week because we're all just excited for the first week of the season. But this is our chance to say something nice about someone. Ross, can you say something nice?
Well, based on the conversation post game about receipts, I guess I'll speak for the entire doubting media and say something nice again about Coach Prime and the Buffaloes. You know, I think that they're a 20.5 point underdog. I think if you talk to a lot of coaches in the coaching community, there was a lot of doubts. There was a lot of criticism of, you know, how he runs his program, the overhaul that he had, that he took on the his approach with overhauling the roster. But man, he put it together, and yeah, that's my nice. Keep your receipts. Let's see after more than one game what happens. But
the CU train is rolling. Pat, can you say something nice?
I can, and I'm going to try not to get emotional while I go through this, so bear with me if I have to pause and gather myself on occasion here. But, you know, in the big house on Saturday, when the Wolverines came out for that first play, and they got in the centipede formation for Coach Harbaugh, oh, it was so touching. I was so moved. He did die, right? Coach Harbaugh did pass away, or he's in deathly ill. Isn't that the case, right?
No, he was eating steak and milk over the offensive coordinator's house.
Oh, okay. I thought it was something seriously wrong, you know, like we really were worried about Coach Harbaugh here as opposed to a 3-game self-imposed school suspension. Darn! I guess I'm not going to say anything nice about that after all.
Well, that was kind of the funny part. Like, you suspended him yourself. That was the free Harbaugh.
Right.
Like, I bet J.J. McCarthy has Ward Manuel's number, the AD. So if you really want to make a statement, you could just call the AD up or saw him around the building. Said, hey, I think we should not. Yeah. That's all right. You know, did I talk about... how do you say it? Diag or Diag? How do you say it?
Diag.
Diag. Yeah, Diag. I wasn't saying it right. Diag Partners, Creative Custom Staffing Solutions. So because of Diag Partners, creating custom staffing solutions, I was able to witness that moment
that touching
live.
Moment.
It really was. It's something that will stick with me forever. I am going to say something nice about Saturday night's late night game on CBS, Texas Tech at Wyoming. And this is the game that, as much as anything else in college football, why I love college football. I don't know if either of these teams are any good. I don't care. There was a team from Lubbock playing a team from Laramie, and it was on national television somehow, and everyone was watching. It was absolute wild game. It goes to double overtime. Texas Tech takes a 17-0 lead. Wyoming comes back, takes the lead. Then Texas Tech goes back. Then they go to OT. Back and forth. Wyoming has this kid, Andrew Peasley, as their quarterback, who's just like, I mean, he's just Wyoming tough. I think he's from Oregon or something, but close enough. The crowd, everyone in the crowd, like, okay, they show like the Alabama fans and all the kids are wearing like cowboy hats or cowboy boots because it's like the fashion.
Yeah,
these guys are wearing, the kids in the Wyoming section are wearing cowboy boots because they just finished like baling hay and then came to the game. Like, everybody wore their hat like unironically. It's like they're all just there. Like, that guy looks like a cow, like a ranch hand. And he is, you know, it's like... 30,000 people show up for the game, 29,000 people, okay? The entire state, that's like 5% of the state's population, is at the game. It's only 583,000 people. They storm the field at the end when Wyoming wins. Sea of yellow. It just was tremendous. It was, both teams could win 4 games. I don't know. It was extremely entertaining college football game. And this is what's so great about this sport. Two towns no one rarely visits. In America, two schools most people don't really think too much about, and they completely entertain everyone. And that's why, no matter how much they want to conference realign this thing into two leagues, I don't think they're ever going to be able to kill this type of stuff where you just have, you know what? It's just a great sport. It's just a great sport. It's just a lot of fun. And it was an incredible night for the University of Wyoming and Laradice, Wyoming. That's what they're calling Laramie now, Laradice. It's just the whole thing just cracked me up. Just loved it. And that's what college football should be. You don't have to win the national title. You don't have to have a media rights deal. Are we making $38 million? We're making $43 million. Just play football. Get everyone out on campus on Saturday night. Have some fun. Great game. Great job by Texas Tech and Wyoming putting on a hell of a show. That is my say something nice.
That's a good one. Well said. There you
go. It was great. All right. That's our show. We'll be back later this week for me to mispronounce all the words in the English language. Mm-hmm. Really not a good day for me.
The people that gave you free tickets, you mispronounced their name.
I got their names right, but
yeah, the name of the business.
The company. Well, just DIAG. Okay. Just look it up. You can Google it. And then
short
you can get
your diagonal.
Diagonal, because there's a diag in the at the University of Michigan, and that's it. So the diag partners, and then they're creating custom. You know, I say Invesco QQQ. Well, right,
you did do that.
I'm pretty good that's at Invesco important. QQQQ. Right, they're good. So anyway, we'll be back. I'll mispronounce some words. I'm gonna call Brian Kelly, see how he does it. We'll work on it. Too terrible, Massachusetts. We do not learn English there. I don't know what to tell you. But we'll be back. We're going to have a midweek show, and then we'll have a race for the case. And then normally the overreaction day will be a day earlier, but I'm glad we waited for FSU LSU. So season's off. Tell your friends, tell a friend, and let's get some listeners. We will talk to you later.